to sound like I was in outer space, I would do that voice for the "and we're back," but I don't. So, and we're back. Welcome to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. This is our Oscar Sprint Profile review of the Ryan Gosling, Damien Chazelle movie First Man, open tonight, premiere night. The two Mikes were seeing it hand in hand again, like we've been doing, really getting on top of these OSPs, and we're going to give you the traditional Oscar Sprint Profile format. We'll walk you through what that is in a minute, but hi, I'm Mike One. This is co-host Also Mike.
Also Mike here. I think we were a little worried about this movie when we stepped into that theater.
I don't think we could be more worried.
I texted you. I was like, it is so crowded. Yeah. My God, what are we going to do? You walked
so
into an
funny
entry empty theater.
I turned the corner. It was a big IMAX theater, so I turned the corner, and so there's this giant Pantheon-type seating, and all you see is the one body that's Also Mike in the middle of it all waving at me with nobody around.
We weren't that early.
It was minutes before the showtime, and right. I put the video on our Twitter. It's at MM and Oscar if you want to go see it. Literally an empty theater. They did fill up a bit, but I wouldn't say there's more than 20 people there?
Yeah, 20, 30, somewhere in there. It wasn't a huge crowd, but it wasn't terrible. I've seen worse crowds for movies that do okay.
Sure, sure.
In all honesty, but it was strange, like 15 minutes before the reserve seating is probably the key phrase there. Before that,
not even it wasn't even 15, was Mike. Yeah. I mean, it was like 8 10. Minutes to showtime.
Well, this theater is notorious AMC for just blowing out every trailer they have,
right,
and just giving us 20-something
minutes. We had a big 20-minute trailer set up tonight that showed a lot of stuff that we already knew.
They're wise to that at this point.
Mortal Engines looks just awful.
It doesn't look good. Well, let's say this. The story is crap. Everything I've seen on that screen, though, looked amazing. The visuals of it.
I'm happy for you. So we're talking about First Man, the Oscar Sprint Profile of First Man today. If you have not joined us for an Oscar Sprint Profile before, if you just heard us from All the Horror and you want to see what we're like on the Oscar side of things, this is our bread and butter. This is what Mike and I do most. We try to make award season year-round, and in that, we call the big lead-up to the Oscars, when all these would-be and should-be and want-to-be contenders are getting debuted and getting out to mass audiences. We called it the Oscar Sprint because it's like one big marathon. Well, I guess it should be a marathon, but sprint's easier to say. It's one long marathon from debut date until Oscars nomination time.
Right. Last year, we literally sprinted. We did all these profiles at once. This year, we're covering these films as they're released to the public, and I think that's been a much better strategy for us. We're going to be able to really sink our teeth into the categories, sink our teeth into the precursor award shows like the Golden Globes, et cetera, et cetera.
And it's going to give us a chance to stay on top of the re-push, too, from the studio. Something that came out earlier. We already see this with A Star Is Born, how they're talking about when it's going to be re-pushed at the end. Mm-hmm. Eighth Grade is just coming out on Blu-ray. We can stay on top of that stuff, but it's really for our benefit because we love doing it, and for your guys' benefit, we want to make you as close to the awards scene as possible and keep you in mind. But the main goal, I would say, you know, 1A is review the movie, let you know if it's worth your time, money, and effort to go see it, and then 1B is definitely show you the Oscars picture of where it fits and profile the film for you on first impression.
And I guess, you know, to start that out, we give you a presentation with what the movie's about, essentially who's worked on it and the cast and crew.
Go for it, man. Also, Mike leads us off, and that's where we usually start, is cast and crew.
It's ready to rock today. So, yeah, this took hours, because this is a loaded cast, Michael.
Sure.
They
went to the moon.
They did. Directed by Damien Chazelle. He's written and directed Whiplash and La La Land.
Never heard of him.
Winning an Oscar for Best Director for La La Land.
Not familiar.
And being nominated for Best Original Screenplay for both of those films.
La La Land won Best Picture that year, right?
It did for a minute there. Chazelle also co-wrote...
That joke will never get old.
La La Land.
Want to read this card
Thank
for
you,
me, Faye?
Thank you, Faye Dunaway. Chazelle also co-wrote the screenplay for 10 Cloverfield Lane, Mike. That's a favorite of ours.
We talk about this a lot in talks, and especially about Damien Chazelle specifically, but that whole narrative of where's the next big director coming from, we've hit on it a couple times, but
there's
in
no new blood in Hollywood.
We keep seeing all these great debut pictures, but Chazelle has just been ace after ace after ace his career.
This is the first directorial effort for Chazelle that he hasn't written, Michael.
Which I was shocked at. I thought he wrote this as well, but no, not the case.
Josh Singer, the Oscar-winning scribe from Spotlight, adapted First Man from a novel by James R. Hansen. Singer has gained screenwriting credits for The Post, The Fifth Estate, and episodes of Fringe, Lie to Me, Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, and 26 episodes of West Wing, in addition to his Oscar win for Spotlight there.
And he sang Mbop.
He did what?
You said Hansen. That's a...
I did say Hansen, and I did say Singer in the same paragraph.
Bop, ma, do, bop, do, da, da,
and that's where your brain went. You are shot the shit, aren't you?
Giants just gave up another touchdown. That's why I'm angry.
First Man stars Ryan Gosling as Neil Armstrong.
God, he's pretty.
Yeah, next best picture and film Twitter just asked a poll question, I think last week, about our favorite Ryan Gosling performance, Michael.
Yes, you were on top of this.
And this was much more difficult a question to answer than I thought because of his filmography. I mean, let's go down it.
Sure.
Blade Runner 2049, which I love.
Yes.
The Nice Guys, which you loved.
One of my favorites.
The Best Actor nominated La La Land.
Never saw it.
Which I loved. The Big Short, which you loved.
Yes.
The Place Beyond the Pines, The Ides of March, which we both loved,
yes.
That latter one. Crazy Stupid Love.
I sincerely never saw Crazy Stupid Love. I have seen La La Land, obviously, but no, I never. Do you see Crazy Stupid Love?
Yes. There's too many I love you speeches in it, but
okay.
it's very good. It delivers a lot of goods, and it is very good.
Fair enough.
Drive, Blue Valentine. Yeah. Lars and the Real Girl. That's his last 10 years, Michael.
And not to forget that he was Sunshine and Remember the Titans back in the day. He's been awesome.
Yeah, I mean, look at all the actors' last 10 years.
Murder by all Numbers wasn't a terrible movie, by the way. One of his earlier ones, too, with who was that? Julia Roberts, I think? No, it was Sandra Bullock.
Fine.
I'm sorry.
I'll get into his first 10 years. Here you go. Ready?
Thank you.
Half Nelson, he was nominated for an Oscar. Stay, The Notebook, The United States of Leland.
What
The Believer,
do you want?
The Believer, and Remember the Titans. He's good in that. But
yes.
Can we get back to his last 10 years, Mike?
Because
I think this is pretty important.
Yes, go ahead.
Other than Meryl Streep and maybe a Jennifer Lawrence, has anybody had a better last 10 years? I don't know. I mean,
Tommy Wiseau's up there. No, it's a great point. And he's also become one of the guys since Leo has taken his crown and been anointed with the Oscar for Best Actor. Now, Gosling's kind of the uncrowned king, or one of, certainly. It's going to be him. Willem Dafoe is in that category as well. And they're going to be battling it out this year. Bradley Cooper can also get a mention there.
Bradley Cooper is probably the name I'd land on, maybe, with the Hangover movies and all the David O. Russell films.
Yep.
You know, the Oscar noms.
Can't argue with them. Yeah.
Big hits.
And this could be his year as well after we did the OSP for...
Look, Murder by Numbers, United States of Leland, The Notebook, Half Nelson, and Stay. You know, those first 10 years were pretty good there too, Mike.
And he showed. He was better.
I was joking.
Well,
I was kidding.
He was better than the scripts. I mean, Murder by Numbers had no reason to be watchable. And it was not terrible.
It was not terrible. Ryan Gosling. Anyway.
Also our tagline.
No, yeah. Ryan Gosling, we're big fans. He won a Golden Globe for La La Land with 3 other nominations at the Globes. He also got a BAFTA nom for that performance. We'll have quite the Oscar lens on his role in this movie coming up. The next major contending performance in First Man comes from Claire Foy. Michael Foy plays...
Might be her time.
Yeah, Janet Armstrong. She is most known for her portrayal of Queen Elizabeth II in the Netflix original series / slowest, also Mike, binge watch of all time, The Crown.
Queen Elizabeth Salander II, yes.
Elizabeth, yes. Foy has won a Golden Globe and an Emmy for that performance in The Crown. I think 2 nominations for each.
Yeah, so again, if you're new to the MMO, this has kind of been one of our recurring themes as well. We are big fans, big proponents of the idea that Claire Foy, as well as Sterling K. Brown, are just one role away from becoming household names. We're big fans of them.
He was awesome in Hotel Artemis, too. Like, that movie isn't great.
I have to see that.
It's not a great movie at all,
right.
But he is very good in it. Again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just obvious. Like, why can't we get him
a
movie?
We love that. I think they're 2 of the most underrated talents in Hollywood right now.
Where he's a best actor. Yeah, I don't get it. So, yeah, these two, if there's a bandwagon.
Right.
Like, we need to get new artwork with the Claire Foy bandwagon. Somehow.
All right. I'll try to commission that from Laura Leslie.
What does a bandwagon look like?
It's just it's a guitar with wheels, I think.
A guitar with wheels. So a guitar with wheels.
Somebody playing the drums on it.
Claire Foy's face on it. And Sterling K. Brown's, that's the other artwork for a later date. Okay, so Claire Foy is coming out later in this year with her role as Elizabeth Salander in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo sequel, The Girl in the Spider's Web. Not a great book. Looks like a pretty good trailer. We shall see. The rest of this cast is crazy.
Yeah.
Pablo Schreiber from Orange is the New Black is a recognizable face, plays Jim Lavelle. Christopher Abbott from the upcoming Vox Lux and The Sinner plays Dave Scott. Ethan Embry from That Thing You Do, Blind Spotting and The Devil's Candy plays Pete Conrad. Ciaran Hinds from Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Game of Thrones, The Debt plays Robert Gilruth. An MMO, Mike, we love to hate the characters of Jason Clark.
Always hateable, yes.
Jason Clark is from Mudbound, Chappaquiddick, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Torture and Zero Dark Thirty. Clark plays Edward Higgins White in this film. He is not a hateable character.
No, quite lovable, actually.
He will be impeccably cast in the upcoming Pet Sematary, which is kind of a hateable character, which I love that.
I have a problem with that preview, but we'll get to it in due time.
I have not watched the preview yet, but I know the character from the book and the last movie that was scary as shit when you're a kid. I'm impressed with Clark's filmography for sure. Kyle Chandler from Friday Night Lights, Argo, Manchester by the Sea, and Bloodline plays Deke Slayton.
He's one of the authority figures in this one.
Yes, Corey Stoll from Ant-Man. He was the Hornet in Ant-Man.
Yeah.
The bad guy there. He's from this year's The Seagull. He's very good in The Seagull with Saoirse Ronan. He was in Girls and House of Cards Season 1. He plays Buzz Aldrin here.
He was hysterical in this movie.
Credited as Boris Tregaron on IMDb. I don't know if that's a little duke where they wanted you to think he played somebody else, but he's Buzz Aldrin. We have Shea Whigham from just about everything on HBO and my HBO watching life. True Detective, Vice Principals, Boardwalk Empire, to name those three. He's also been in Fargo, Agent Carter, Narcos, and Waco. This guy is on prestige television everywhere. He plays Gus Grissom here. Whigham will also be in the upcoming Bush administration film, Vice, with Christian Bale. And he's also showing up in this week's other main release, Bad Times at the El Royale, which we're not sure we're going to review. We'll see how
reviews
it
have not
us.
Been great. Surprisingly down on those reviews, so, which you could say the same about this movie. We're going to get to it in specs in just a moment.
Patrick Fugit from Almost Famous. He's the teenage journalist in Almost Famous. He was also in Gone Girl.
I didn't recognize him.
He was Elliot C. And then First Man also stars Olivia Hamilton, Corey Michael Smith, and Brady Smith. What a cast. What a sausage fest.
It was the 60s.
This is a this is a hell of a group.
Nary a minority to be seen, really.
Just a couple production notes. Clint Eastwood was attached to adapt this book in 2003.
Could have easily been a Clint Eastwood movie. I could absolutely see.
Yeah, he just did Space Cowboys not too long before.
Yep.
In the late 90s there, early 2000s, I forget when that came out, but Warner Brothers bought the rights. Universal and DreamWorks eventually acquired the property in the early 2010s. The biggest production nugget we have to talk about here is the American flag controversy, and I got kind of a timeline for that.
Sure.
At the end of August, August 31st, it was stated that First Man would not include a scene of Armstrong and Aldrin planting an American flag on the moon. A lot of blowback after that statement.
We actually had a discussion about it amongst ourselves. We had a pretty hearty disagreement about whether or not, and ours was strictly restricted to the preview.
Right.
The TV spot as to whether or not there should be
a preview.
Yeah.
Senator Marco Rubio called the decision total lunacy.
If you're going to listen to one guy about what looks like total lunacy.
Why did I take this side? I'm so regretting everything. Giselle responded by saying, the flag is shown standing on the lunar surface, but planting the flag, Giselle basically said that we chose not to focus on that.
Because it's not about, I mean, there is patriotism all throughout this movie, yes, because it is an American, very heavily American movie, but the idea was about the man, Neil Armstrong.
The Armstrong family released a statement saying that this film was not anti-American in any way, and I would agree with that.
Well, I'm Marco Rubio says otherwise. Break.
You're just always devil's advocate. I'm just coming over. You reach the olive branch across the table and then slap me with it.
That was sarcasm on my part. I'll side with Neil Armstrong's family.
Here's the thing. Buzz Aldrin is still creating noise. He tweeted out photos during this controversy, directed towards this controversy, of him and Armstrong planting that flag. The photos of him and Armstrong planting that flag on Twitter. Even President Trump commented on the controversy, calling the filmmaker's decision unfortunate, saying, "It's almost like they're embarrassed at the achievement coming from America. I think it's a terrible thing. When you think about Neil Armstrong and when you think about landing on the moon, you think about the American flag. For that reason, I wouldn't even want to watch the movie," end quote.
I have to believe that Damien Chazelle is a little tickled to be on the opposing side as Donald Trump.
I think this is a lot of white noise at the end of the day. I don't think, in my personal opinion, like you just said, this movie is plenty patriotic.
Yeah.
This movie is tracking the space race. It's not the film about the space race.
No.
That is From the Earth to the Moon. That is
at least not an A storyline. It's like a C or D storyline.
Right. That's Hidden Figures. That's other films.
Right.
This movie is about the Armstrong family.
The Armstrong about marriage.
The two families kind of intersecting. The family of these astronauts working to get this professional operation out there.
Good call,
it's focused on that work family and then the home family. And it's fast, and it's all obviously a cross-section for Neil Armstrong.
Total character study. And that's why it is going to contend. That's part of the, at least one of the big reasons why it's going to be an Oscar contender. And we'll talk about that in the Oscars lens in a moment.
I don't think any of the... here's where I land at the end of the day. I mean, the Republicans didn't see this movie. The Republicans that spoke out, the president, the senator, they spoke out against something they didn't see. And I think if they saw this, they probably should or would or might.
Republicans are making claims without factual
backups?
They
might change their opinions of this movie, because I think this movie, like I said, is plenty patriotic. You got American flags. It's not all over the place all the time throughout the movie, but the American flag is present in the movie.
Well, I'm not going to have just sit here and have you besmirch the good name of the grand old party saying that they don't use facts and evidence to support their claims.
I would
just stare at you in an ironic way.
Yeah, so why would you come out and just spit venom at this movie when you hadn't seen it and when you didn't see what's going on? That's kind of silly.
That's a slippery slope. Look, you could believe what you want to believe. We're not here to tell you right, wrong, or indifferent, but those are our beliefs as well. We think something that is on the opposite side of what Marco Rubio and Donald Trump say about it. That's all it is. There's plenty of patriotism in this.
I suppose you can have more American flag in the movie, of course. I mean, that's not a bad... I wouldn't even be mad about it if they did.
But it's elevator scene where they're going up the rocket and it spells out United States and the flag.
It's on his thing the whole time. Yeah. They show it in a huge, beautiful silhouette, Kubrickian-like, with the flag.
And there is a scene of the flag planted in the moon.
Yeah.
It's there. It's just gorgeous. Not close up. So.
But yeah, they don't show the actual planting of the flag. So that's somewhat spoilers, but it's a pre-spoiler, pre-controversy.
We made it to the moon. I think that's the spoiler.
We made it to the moon. Here we go, Mike. You got some specs.
Yeah, we'll talk about specs. For First Man, had its world premiere at the Venice Film Festival on August 29th of this year. It's releasing wide on October 12th, when you will be hearing this episode. It's got a runtime of 138 minutes, so strap in. Gotta say, does not feel longer than 2 hours.
Right. It's a very suspenseful film, and it's not a super fast-paced film either.
No, I would say agonizing for the first half hour, 45 minutes.
My nerves are shot. Even the drive home, or the drive back to your place here, was just suspenseful.
This is your home now.
It was harrowing.
You're right.
I mean, think
you're
about
absolutely
it.
Right.
Weren't you? I was literally
on the edge of my seat at one point, leaning forward, just taking it all. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous thing.
Yeah.
And I might have something to say about IMAX theaters and movie theater, the cinema experience in general, which I might have to apologize to Matt Neglier for later on. First Man, directed by Damien Chazelle, written by Josh Singer, Ryan Gosling, Claire Foy, Jason Clark, Kyle Chandler, all-star. Also, Mike already told you that. The script is adapted from the book First Man, The Life of Neil Armstrong by James R. Hansen. Mbop. La La Land's Oscar-winning composer Justin Hurwitz handles the music. My God, is it epic and gorgeous. And La La Land's Oscar-winning cinematographer Linus Sondgren is the director of photography. Give both those men raises. This film sounds and looks stunning. Absolutely stunning.
Blew me away, yeah.
Four-time Oscar nominee Nathan Crowley does production design, and Marty Bowen, Wick Godfrey, and Isaac Klausner get producer credits on First Man along with Chazelle. Universal, Amblin, and DreamWorks are the production houses in charge, along with Temple Hill Entertainment and Fantasma. Universal also has the distributing rights. We'll talk about some numbers that this movie is doing, and again, kind of down, at least as far as some critical numbers, at least as far as IMDb goes. Whether or not you consider those critical numbers is up to you.
I got a theory on this, but...
I do as well, and I think we just talked about it. Is that right?
I think, yes.
Okay. IMDb right now, 6.6 out of 10 on 3,700 plus votes. Obviously, that'll rise as more people will see this movie, so 3,700 is kind of a low number. 6.6, are we both saying that might be influx of bad press?
I wonder a couple things. Bad press, because not enough people have seen this to put in 3,700 votes into IMDb.
Right.
Like, the critics are all not going to put votes into IMDb as users, right?
Right.
I don't think
assume.
They're going to. They're going to put it into the critic scores.
Right.
maybe there's more to be had. So I think that's people just voting on it before they've seen it. And
Lady Gaga fans talking it down and getting making sure you see
it. Could be the Little Monsters. Yeah. I would not put it past them, especially after their attack on Venom, which was totally unnecessary because Venom did well.
I would love a documentary about whether or not that actually happened.
They're in two different worlds.
It's amazing. If that happened, it's amazing.
All the money A Star Is Born was going to make, it made.
And yes, and that's
Venom didn't take anything away. People just went to the movies like crazy. It was great. It was a great last weekend.
You cannot control the little monsters.
But what are we doing with the internet is what I want to know. And here, in this instance, why is this a 6.6? It's the most ridiculous thing I ever
seen. Could be very politically motivated. We don't know. I don't have an answer for it, but the strict critic scores say otherwise. Metascore has it an 84 right now. That's best picture territory. Rotten Tomatoes sits at a 91% critic score, 8.1 out of 10 average critic score. 167 out of 189 reviews are fresh. That's high. 91%. BoxOfficeReport.com's predicting a $21.5 million opening for First Man. Now, we just talked about A Star Is Born, which did about $47 million.
Right.
It's not... 21 is not great, and if our theater tonight is any indication, it may actually be a little lower.
Yeah, I think around 20 makes some sense. I don't think that's necessarily a bad number. I think it'll have a long release point. I don't think this is like a movie of the week type thing.
Is this something that'll gain an audience, you think?
I think it should.
I hope so. Yeah,
I think the more people see it, the more the reviews are awesome, the more people should eventually get to the theater.
And this is why we keep saying, we try to do these in these profiles, give you a broad spectrum of what everyone's saying, because if you live your life just by the tomato meter, or you live your life just by the IMDb review scores, or you live your life just by certain professional critics and reviewers, you're going to rob yourself out of seeing something worth seeing. Hollywood Reporter also says it's tracking about 18 to 20 million in its opening weekend. The budget is reportedly between 60, 70 million, somewhere in that range, obviously. Right. New release, kind of a slow opening weekend. They're not going to give you those numbers. Mike, you have an interesting theory as to why you think this one's kind of tracking slow.
And some audience members that voted on IMDb might have, and sure, it did go to the film festivals. And they may, it's absolutely not just the critics. So, all right. So I think bottom line is, when you go to a film festival, you're seeing more than one movie in a day, especially Telluride, especially Destination.
More likely than not, right.
Yeah, and this would be a tough third movie of anybody's day.
It's a great theory because this one is emotionally tolling.
This is going to be your 8 o'clock screening or your 9 o'clock. This is going to be your featured screening. You're going to be having seen films all day.
Right.
Or at least one other film.
And ending on this.
Right.
Where you have to be invested and you have to be on the edge of your seat and pay attention.
This is a white knuckler. This is super intense, but surprising after all of the build up here. This is an emotional movie.
Very.
Like this
extremely.
One.
Extremely.
This one rips your guts out at times, and I was shocked to feel that way. That was the biggest surprise.
Well,
that's where
we're going to get into expectations, what we thought about this. We'll do it after the plot. Here's the IMDb quick synopsis. A look at the life of the astronaut Neil Armstrong and the legendary space mission that led him to become the first man to walk on the moon, July 20th, 1969. I would say a lot of the lead up is kind of the emphasis of this movie, as well as the actual walk on the moon. But yes, the family dynamic, that marriage especially, plays a huge role.
So there's two kind of levels of expectation I wanted to ask you about here, Mike.
Sure.
Number one, did you think you're going to have a good time at the movies? Just kind of general expectation. Number two is, did you think you were going to see an Oscar movie, like a top five movie of your year? What were you expecting?
I was kind of dreading this one, and I told you this when we recorded. We've recorded like 18 days in a row right now, so I don't remember when. But I said to you that I think I just get bitter when there's something that has a lot of momentum that I just haven't had access to yet. And it's like, how can everybody feel this way about it? Because we're some of the first people to see these movies. Obviously there are critics that get early screeners and stuff like that.
Right.
But this was widespread. People were high on this on Twitter more so than just professional
so
critics.
So you're saying you can be easily misinterpreted to say right now that you don't like when everybody else is having fun and you're not.
Nick Jonas made a song called Jealous that was about me and not about his relationship. But yeah, so I get kind of heavy-headed when it comes to these big ones. I had the same feeling about A Star Is Born. But did I expect to see an Oscar movie? No, not really at all. I expected all the hype about A Star Is Born, I expected to kind of overshadow this. And there was so much about A Star Is Born after it debuted last week everybody's still talking about how it's going to sweep everything but Best Picture now, which blows my mind, but I've said my piece on that. So no, I wasn't expecting an Oscar movie. I certainly wasn't expecting what we got.
So you're pleasantly surprised to tease your
more than pleasant, yeah.
I loved both of the trailers. I've been gushing over them for months.
Especially from a cinematography perspective.
As good and as cinematic an experience just watching those trailers. So I had high expectations. My expectations, it took me a couple hours to get this profile done for us today to get this pod out, and they just grew throughout the day when I saw Josh Singer from Spotlight.
You're amping yourself up.
When I saw the cinematographer and the Michael Hurwitz from La La Land.
Sure.
And I was like, holy shnikes. We got this cast that's just a never-ending line of Sausage Fest great actors. I mean, it's really going to work, right? Claire, we got two major acting contenders. We got all the technical aspects. We got everybody saying it's Best Picture. So I was literally on cloud nine.
That's awesome. And you were met, do you think?
And my expectations were exceeded because I got more than I thought I'd get. I was expecting like maybe a B+, A minus, just, you know, bang, this is a good movie. And I think I got a little more than that. I'm still kind of, I don't know where to rank this at the end of the day with my grade, but I think this is a every year Best Picture contender as we get into our Oscar lens.
Without question. We'll talk about the Oscar lens right now. We'll lead off with that Best Picture category, as well as we'll touch on Best Director. Chazelle getting a lot of love. Big year for, I mean, Picture's big pretty much every year. There are some down years for Best Picture. I don't think this is one of them. Chazelle, that director category is going to be quite full.
It's full already.
Yeah.
And he needs some more buzz. He needs some more campaigning coming up.
Best Picture numbers just going around the critics circle. Feinberg Forecast has it listed on the front runner section. Again, it's listed at number 6.
I don't know if
those numbers are numbered or if they're ranked or not, but it is in the front runner category. That's what's important here. Gold Derby, 23 for 23. It is a sweep for being nominated across all 23 critics as a nominee for Best Picture. Two critics have it at number 1 right now. Award Circuit, it sits at number 3 in terms of their rankings. And next Best Picture, again, 10 for 10 as far as critics ranking it within the top 10 for Best Picture. Mike just told you no number ones. What about Chazelle's numbers?
Yeah, Best Director Damien Chazelle, Feinberg Forecast, has him at number 5. So that I'm a little worried there because I feel like he directs the living shit out of this movie. I mean, the cutaways alone, his hand on the editing room. I mean, he's taking close-ups of all those gauges, Michael.
Within the cockpit of the shuttles.
Yeah, just when to go close-ups.
And
when,
a handheld camera, so you get... Not only
do not
you get,
to make you dizzy, either.
How he doesn't get someone motion sick from this camera work is beyond me. It's astounding. But he not only gives you the close-up and the shaky cam and all that, those touches, he does. He goes full first-person POV at times. He literally turns the camera from, you see, as if you're in the astronaut's or in Neil Armstrong's position. You see his hands working. You see him turn to the left sometime and make eye contact with his co-pilot. It's astounding what he did.
I would like to take a look at this script. My guess here, Michael, is that Josh Singer kind of wrote, okay, sequence for the this test, that test, and then Damien Chazelle just... Okay,
took the camera.
Went nuts with it.
Right.
Just went nuts with it. It's absurd to me that he is not higher on people's best directors right now. Yes, we've had some good performances, but it's absolutely freaking absurd.
I would co-sign that as well, yes.
Gold Derby says 21 out of 23 have him in their top fives with a 1 top ranking.
Now, I don't mean to cut you off, but A Star Is Born, people weren't... There was hype for it, and people were saying it was going to sweep these things. But now there's that borderline cockiness about some of the Star Is Born people that are supporting it, saying, oh, I told you it was so great. Well, that's because everybody came out and loved it. Once more eyes get on this, you're going to think that maybe the pendulum will swing back in this way, and people will be more confident saying Chazelle is a number one, as long as they're not lone people out there saying it.
The strange thing about A Star Is Born, we talked about it, there's off notes in there. And I like the movie a lot. You still, even
begrudgingly, movie. I gave it a B+.
You gave it a B+. You gave it a really good grade for you. You're a tough grade.
I am.
And I gave it an A-, and we really liked it.
Yeah.
And we gushed. The directorial performance in this film.
Not close.
And listen, not even in...
A Star Is Born may be one of the premier directorial debuts ever. Like, it's up there with Get Out, Jordan Peele stuff.
Yeah, you could talk about last year that... You could honestly talk... Guillermo del Toro in the same sentence as Christopher Nolan and Jordan Peele.
Right.
Because of all the things that del Toro's doing in that film. Yes, we loved Bradley Cooper's take on the performance aspect of A Star Is
Born.
He
was shooting music videos beautifully.
It was awesome.
He could bring back MTV right now if he wanted to alone.
But think about the montage in this film.
Not
it just
close.
It
not
blows
close.
Me away. So award circuit has...
And that's not a knock, to just to make that clear. That is in no way a knock on Bradley Cooper.
It's not close. It's Kubrick versus...
It is Cooper. This is Kubrick.
This is
Kubrickian.
This is great. This is crazy. So award circuit has Chazelle at number 3 on their list. Next Best Picture has 10 out of 10 in the top 10. 9 out of 10 top 5s. No number 1s for Damien Chazelle. Again, I just think it's silly.
Let's see what happens. I have faith in the critics, and especially the ones we follow. I have faith that as more people get eyes on this, they're going to start coming around.
You don't have to love this movie, but when you watch what the director did in this movie...
It's
like,
amazing, especially
the
with the team.
Is wrong
with that triumvirate between Chazelle, Hurwitz, and Sandgren. So we have the director, cinematographer, the score. It's like a painting, really. It's like watching a living work of art, which is exactly what it is. Guys at the tops of their field just really acing what is in front of
them.
The
film's a pressure cooker, too, and it's one of the better suspense movies since awesome. Dunkirk.
Which is astounding in its own right, because there's no... Big spoiler, like, we land on the moon. They make it back, okay.
And it's like Titanic, right. In a sense. You know the story.
You know how it ends,
You know exactly what's going to happen. You know there's going to be a big triumph at the end, and yet you're just white-knuckling it the whole movie. So, best adapted screenplay, Mike. Gold Derby, 14 out of 21, with one top ranking. Award circuit, number 3. Next best picture, 10 out of 10, with 6 top 5s. What did you think of the script?
Whatever. If you want to punt a category because you don't want to give this anything a big 5 sweep in this day and age, go ahead. But if you want to award, I'm okay with it not getting adapted screenplay love if it means Chazelle gets recognized, the picture gets recognized, and the two performances.
I wonder where the cutoff is. I was a little harsh on Josh Singer early because I didn't like his script for The Post, or I didn't like...
Right.
I didn't like...
I like The Post more than
I didn't like the script for Spotlight as much...
That's because you're an idiot.
As some others that year. I don't...
Kidding, of course.
I like Josh Singer, and I love that he was a West Wing guy. I watched that show more than once.
I have not. I've started it 3 separate times.
Like, I'm a lunatic. I've seen that whole thing twice, at least.
How much do you give to Singer versus how much do you give to Sorkin?
That's the same question I have here. How much do you give for Singer or Chazelle?
Well, Chazelle doesn't take a writing credit, though. I think it's a little different.
I know that. I'm just saying the credit. You know, do you give the credit of what he's focusing on to the director or the screenplay? It's almost like I really want to read the screenplay. It's
going to be a fascinating debate, certainly, too. And maybe they're carnivorous. Maybe they devour each other's chances.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they both did a hell of a job. But the end product, he must have written the shit out of it. Chazelle directed the shit out of it. So, I mean, that's where we land.
We'll go to cinematography next. Gold Derby, 20 out of 21 critics have it in the top 5. 6 of them have it number 1 right now.
Right.
Award circuit, it's number 1. Next Best Picture, 10 out of 10 with 8 top 5s. This is a shoo-in for a nomination for cinematography.
Right, and to be fair, you know, the other major contender that we haven't talked about yet is Roma.
Right.
And Alfonso Cuarón, who's been a technical maestro over the years. So, you know, we're gushing about this because it's before Roma.
Yeah, we've seen it. Sure, we've had it.
So we may just be floored by Roma, and it might be one of those years you got two phenomenal films.
Also, it's going to be difficult to beat because, unfairly, Damien Chazelle actually went to the moon, and I refuse to believe anything otherwise because he couldn't have gotten these shots otherwise.
Here's the thing. Yes, I agree. The cinematography blows my freaking mind.
I don't know how he got those shots with the from afar, the long distance shots of the rocket going in space.
There was one point where I was like, the rocket going up when they actually finally go to the moon, and I'm just like, oh my God, now we're going full shots.
It was astounding.
And the finale is just like all full shots, and because you got close-ups for most of the first two acts, which is just drives
gritty.
You wild.
Yeah.
It drives you wild. He really withholds those wide,
beautiful, sprawling,
and then that's
shots.
All you get in the finale. Oh. And I'm just like, unreal, it's just remarkable. So, best editing for me is probably the most obvious.
If it gets an editing, it's going to be a nomination for best picture, and I think it deserves both.
I think Gold Derby has it 19 out of 20 with 13 top rankings. Award Circuit has it at number 1. Next Best Picture has 10 out of 10 top 5, so it's 6. Number 1s in that group. So
tie.
This is going to win best editing in my mind. All right, best production design, Mike?
Production design, Gold Derby, 16 out of 19, only has one top spot right now. Award Circuit sits at number 3. Next best picture, again, 10 out of 10. 8 top 5s and 2 number 1s there. Production design, I mean, this certainly felt like a 1960s set, a 1960s movie.
Yeah, they made it the period piece of it really work for us. And yet, you know, we're not, it's all in the background. It's all deep background. It's all for ambiance and mood and tone and setting. And yet we're just so focused literally with the camera on the constant close-ups, on all the technical aspects of the space missions, that it's almost, I would like to see this movie again and just notice all that detail.
Yeah,
that
there's a lot said in this movie about what you don't see too, as far as like when they're sitting in the rocket ship and they only have that one little window to see what's going on. You can only see when it goes from blue to black, and then if something's going on, when they're spiraling out of control, they can't tell what the hell's happening. So it's there's a lot of theater of the mind, which we've talked about a lot in our sure. Halloween review, but it's kind of it restricts what you do see in a way, which is going to take away from production design, I would say, but through no fault of anyone's.
Yes, some of these sets really forward the story. It's going to come into the plot, and we're going to talk about that in best scenes in the spoiler section. But to get into the sound categories, Mike, sound mixing, Award Circuit has number 2. Next Best Picture, 10 out of 10, top 5, so 3 top spots. Sound editing, Award Circuit has at number 1. Next Best Picture, 10 out of 10, with 8 top 5s and 7 number 1. So wow. Sound editing, film editing seems to be the two that has the best chance to win.
So doesn't that make it a best picture? If it's that immersive an experience for everyone and they think what they're hearing and what they're seeing is so stunning and impressive?
The word on it right now is that it's a technical marvel, which it is.
Sure.
And that's where it's going to win some awards. And I think it's a little more than that. I would agree with you.
Agree.
But there's no question about those categories. Now, visual effects, Mike.
Visual effects, Award Circuit right now, it's number 1. Next Best Picture, 10 out of 10, 9 top 5s, 4 number 1s as it is. I don't know what to even say about this. The visual effects are stunning.
You think it's all real. Like you said, you think he went to the moon.
I don't understand how he didn't actually have rockets at his disposal to shoot.
It's from Earth to the moon, but I guess they had IMAX cameras back then. This was a secret invention that, like Roswell.
I said to you before we started, if thank God that conspiracy theory came out in 1969 when we went to the moon, because if this film was present in 1969, nobody would buy that we ever actually landed on the moon. They'd just be like, yeah, Chazelle did it. It was all at a studio backlot in Hollywood.
Kubrick and Chazelle.
Yeah, Kubrick and Chazelle. Oh, my God.
To double-team this. Yeah, I totally agree with you. That's funny. Original score, Award Circuit has it at second.
It was next gorgeous.
Picture, 10 out of 10 with 9 top 5s and 5 1s. This is a sleeper for me.
Yeah. Didn't expect score. It.
I did not expect to be just like I noticed it at one point, especially in the finale. They really let loose in the finale. The walk into the rocket ship. That score is going off from Michael Hurwitz. I'm in love
we
with that
score. We should have known better, too, because of how great La La score was.
And the trailer music is not in the film.
No.
I love the trailer music with all the chimes. I think it is chimes.
I thought that the moon song was going to be a much bigger role, too, but he only says it the one time. It's not worked in. It's not overdone. It's very effective.
They used songs for the trailers, and then they used songs for the films.
Misdirection.
And the score that they really focus on is a very emotional score.
Yeah.
I hummed that thing the whole way home.
Just this was an event.
All right, tonight. So meat on the bone here. Performances. Best actor, Mike, Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling, Feinberg forecast right now. He's in the front runner category. He's listed 4th. We don't know if that means anything as far as a ranking or not. Gold Derby, 18 out of 22 critics have him. There's only one that has him at number 1 right now, though. Award Circuit, he is sitting 5th. Next Best Picture, 10 out of 10 sweep there. 5 top 5s. He's going to get nominated.
To me, he's a nominee in any way.
Right, I agree with that. I don't think he'll win. I don't think he's better than what Bradley Cooper did.
You know, I want to see these performances more. I have to see
that's
these
fair.
Films again.
But on
and
first
again.
Blush, that's my
on
take,
first
yeah.
blush, I would probably agree with you, but I would say it's on the same level. I would say
they're both phenomenal.
He has emotional scenes, but he's just like we are. He's white knuckling it throughout this storyline.
He's like a robot because he has to be. That's his persona. He has to be that straight-laced.
Performance, your emotions seep through, though.
So, without question.
So good. And certainly the arc of it all, the way it's written, like I said, about whether it's Singer or whether it's Chazelle, the arc of this character is just so strong. And there's such a payoff by the end of it. My God. That, again, where do you give the credit for this movie working so well? I think Ryan Gosling deserves something
here. I agree. I would agree. He definitely is worthy of nomination, without question.
Claire Foy right now, Feinberg Forecast says she's a front runner number 5 for Best Supporting Actress, Gold Derby. 21 out of 23 top 5 rankings. Nobody has her at number 1 right now.
It's a little surprising.
Very surprising. Award Circuit has her at number 2. Next Best Picture, 10 out of 10 in their top 10s with 8 top 5s. Nobody at number 1, though.
She struck me, her performance was like a more determined and solemn version of what Jennifer Connelly did in A Beautiful Mind.
Right. I thought she was extraordinary. Yeah. I thought...
And Jennifer Connelly won the Oscar that year for that performance.
Yeah, I thought her... Like, I was expecting the nagging wife, right, from the trailer.
Oh, I wasn't.
I was expecting more negativity coming from her.
Interesting.
From her performance. I was worried about it.
Right, and yet, sure.
That is not her character at all. That is, so, yeah, I was totally relieved to see
that. That would have upset me if that was the direction.
Yeah, no, it's not at all. Because in the trailer, her big scene is going at the space guys. You're a bunch of little boys, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I thought she was going to be more negative. She is not a negative character here.
No, and she's like, carrying...
I thought she was going to be an antagonist for him, necessarily.
Right. Well, and mentally, maybe she is, too. But there's a whole burden that they're sharing, and there's a whole case that she's making, kind of keeping resentment towards him in a way. It's a really great performance by Claire Foy.
It's more complex than just protagonism, antagonism.
No, without,
husband, white, men versus women.
You're rooting for everyone.
It's not that at all. So it really works.
I think right now she might be my number one. I think, gun to my head, I would expect her to win before I think he could win as far as Oscars go in this year.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. So kind of where we land at the end of this non-spoiler review. This is a watch for us.
Easily.
This is film editing. This is cinematography. This is original score. And we think it's a Best Picture nominee.
It felt like I was watching a piece of history tonight. Right. It really did. And I know that's cheesy to say, and that's very rhetorical, but that's genuinely how I felt. I had goosebumps a couple times. I was literally on the edge of my seat a couple times, just trying to take it all in. Now, do we feel this way? I had this thought, trying to stay objective too. Do we feel this way because we saw in IMAX, and this is one of the big, certainly benefits from being seen on a huge screen. This was a conversation I was having in part with Matt Negley and a couple other people at Next Best Picture. Will Mavity was another one at Mavericks Movie. We were having a conversation, a debate yesterday on Twitter about what is happening to the mid-budget picture, and is the cinema experience necessary? And I know we actually differ. You and I differ. You think it's very, very necessary.
I think it's been enhanced over the last 10
years. Right, and their argument, at least Matt's argument, was more so that it's kind of a dying art, and it needs to be saved, because these mid-budget pictures won't get the true appreciation they deserve if they're not seeing these cinematic. Now, not that this is a mid-budget, $70 million is kind of a high budget, but I'm willing, I was of the opinion that it didn't really, really matter. Something like this, there's no question it is enhanced by the bigger screen and by the cinema experience.
I just think it's all relative. Everything is trending up in terms of technology, correct?
Oh, well,
today's mid-budget picture is not that $20 million Oliver Stone movie. It's this.
More 67,
it's 60, this is a mid-budget movie, and they blow this out of the out of the park.
Absolutely.
I mean, $100 million is almost like a mid-budget movie now, and you got the big budget movies, $200 million,
$300 million with Avengers.
So everything's trending up. This is a cinematic experience, though, is
yes,
as good as I've had in a while. Here's the thing, though. If you go in expecting like thriller goods, like action movie goods, this is not an action movie. It's not a thriller.
No,
if you just expect to be just like, rah.
Expect to watch a painting.
It's like it delivers dramatic goods. And like we gushed about the cinematography. Like there's eye-popping moments in this movie. There's like goosebumps on the back of your neck, emotional moments. And this movie is just like ripping your guts out for the first act. And that was my biggest surprise. Like, Pixar film emotions. And I did not expect that in the least. I didn't know there was this story behind this man and woman. And that's what we're dealing with. And that was a huge surprise. I don't think that's a spoiler to say it's emotional.
This may also have, as far as watch, don't watch, obviously it's a watch, but you may have to be in the right headspace for this as well.
True.
You can't have this on in the background.
This is an intense movie. Yeah. This is a movie that you should go to the theaters and make a night of it. I don't necessarily think it's a Saturday night movie. It might be like a Thursday night movie like we just did.
Yeah, this is... It's an event. I don't know how else to describe it. It's an actual event. Like, you get impacted, I feel, if you've seen this movie. And you will gush if you're a fan of cinema. But if you're there to just take your mind off things, this isn't going to do it for you.
There's a lot of wow moments in terms of, like, the history just hitting you.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Washing over you. Like you said, you're watching a piece of history. But just, like, there's a ton of little moments where, like, he's just sitting down in a hallway. And I'm just, like, thinking, oh, my God, what he's about to do. And
or when he's staring at his feet on the moon before he takes the step.
Good God.
My Lord.
Incredible. So
my
there's
heart
a,
was beating
there's
out
a
my
little,
chest.
There's shots, and then there's, like, scenes that just contextualize in what's about to happen. And number one, I want to know more. I want to listen to this book. I'm going to have to listen to this book.
Right, yeah.
I absolutely have to. Must read. And I'm going to. And I want to know more about his story. But this, I want to see this again.
Yeah, you guys probably have a feeling of where this is going. But before we say what we're going to say officially, let's dance.
Spoilers ahead! This is a spoiler. Warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
I've never felt less appropriate playing that music for a movie before. But anyway, that's our spoiler music. This is the spoiler section for First Man. That music, not apropos of what this movie had within its confines. But if you have not seen First Man, you really, really should. Just make sure you have the day free to do so. But if you have not seen it yet, go back, hit pause here, go back and listen to a couple other different episodes on your way to the theater.
Absolutely.
Take in First Man, come back and hit play later. But if you do not care about seeing it first, you just want to hear our thoughts, or you just want to hear the spoilers, the ins and outs of the plot of Damien Chazelle and Ryan Gosling's First Man, then it is all spoilers all the time from here on out. You are in the right place. We usually start these spoiler sections with a carryover, and the big carryover, and really probably the biggest spoiler, quote-unquote, thing about this movie, plot point anyway, is that there was a young daughter named Karen that the Armstrongs had, and within the first 20 minutes of the film, we meet Karen, we see her struggling, dealing with chemotherapy and cancer treatment, and eventually, very shortly after, she does pass away in a heart-wrenching scene.
Just your heart is in your throat for the first 40,
especially,
40
this,
minutes
this
of this
girl
movie.
Looked just like my niece. Little blonde girl with pretty eyes. Ugh.
It just rips my guts
She's
out.
No, she's no older than three or four.
And the just the way he chose to show this, I can't get over it. I mean, they went the one touching scene with... I mean, here's the thing. Like, they connected his family life with his work life. He is attacking the treatments, her cancer treatments, like an engineer. He's diagramming all her cancer treatments, all of her chances for
notebook.
Survival. He is networking through to Canadian doctors with all the doctors at the Delta company that he's working through.
It's so relatable, too, because, God bless, don't have cancer, don't do that, but I have a pretty significant health issue myself, and it just, you can see on the screen the father's drive and commitment to get their kid the best care possible, willing to go to any lengths. It reminded me so much of my father. I was choking up watching it because it's just so impactful, and seeing the drive and determination and just the never say die attitude when you're hopeless, essentially.
I thought we were going to go into a movie and this was going to be young Neil Armstrong staring at the moon for the first half hour.
Totally,
right?
Totally agree. Absolutely.
I did not expect engineer Neil Armstrong with cancer treatment diagrams on a stack full of papers with a diary that he's just obsessing over. And then you have big scenes involved with the Flight Academy there. But the most emotional scene in the first act of the movie is when he's singing to his daughter.
Yep. I see the moon.
About the moon.
From the trailer.
And then the follow-up to that scene is them putting her in a casket.
At the fucking gravesite, lowering the casket. So heart-wrenching. And there's a lot... That's a plot point throughout the movie.
We talked...
His motivation.
Yeah.
It puts an immense emotional strain on their marriage.
I just think we talked about Call Me By Your Name last year in the sense that you had Elio was a green light. You had Armie Hammer was a red light. You have two red lights. You have two characters just repressing their emotions.
For a litany of reasons. This is a big one. This is one of them, but it is also one of others.
Two red lights, and they do it in different ways, and they let emotion seep out at different times, and it's like, well, she's going to let emotion seep out at the funeral, and then he's going to let emotion get the best of him when he puts himself
in
the study after the
funeral. Beautiful is
Good
the
God.
Subtext of that. They need to let the emotion out a little bit to survive in the same way the shuttle needs to let that brake engine out at the beginning when it's spinning to stop spinning. It's an analogy that was so perfect.
I did not expect this to be the through line of the story.
No, I'm like you. I was expecting Neil Armstrong, how do we get there, just this driven, determined guy that has this dream of walking on the moon.
Now, that being said, you have one flight test after another, and basically he bounces off the atmosphere. What
to open the fucking movie.
What an opening sequence.
We think we're going to lose him right there. he's trying to go back to Earth, and he's flying up further into space.
Mike, we know he walks on the moon.
Right, exactly.
10 years later, or whatever, years
what
later.
What the fuck?
And we're watching this and freaking the F out. Number one, cinematically, that's as good of a Gorgeous. Opening sequence as
I've seen. If Ryan Gosling wasn't actually in space, how the fuck did they get that shot? I don't understand it.
Neil, you're bouncing off the atmosphere now, Neil. I mean, the calm and the poise.
Well, that was another through line throughout this. Houston was, I guess you have to be, when these guys are in space, they're fighting fires in their cockpit at times. They're fighting things going wrong. They're spiraling out of control, going to pass out. And Houston has to be so calm and just play things by the book and by the numbers. I would be screaming in my headset asking for a response.
Abso-freaking-lutely. I would be screaming. I'd be losing my mind. And I've done that for so many other things in my life in a professional and a private sense.
We are not astronauts.
We are the furthest thing from astronauts. If I don't get my dinner order right, I'm losing my mind. So this is just like, these guys are stone
cold. I can't handle
cold.
The computer beating me in Madden, all right?
They're pro. These are the most professional.
I'm not trying to derail us here, but that also goes to Gosling's performance because Neil Armstrong, he played it so stoic. Yes, he does have those little incidents. He goes on his own to cry over the loss of Karen, his daughter, during the funeral service or the funeral procession. He goes,
breaks your heart.
He goes, storms out of the building during another funeral because they lost astronauts.
And he just saw his daughter playing with the other girls at this other funeral, and he had like a break there.
Right. And so, but he knows he needs to. He's going to be judged if he shows emotion. And it comes up in his interview to be part of the Apollo mission. You know, is it going to affect you on this mission?
It would be unreasonable to think it wouldn't affect me. And it just, he's just honest with them.
Yeah.
He's just honest with them, but he's stone cold about it. And that's
borderline robotic. And Claire Foy shares that trait at times because she needs to be the pillar of strength for the home life, for the family, to put on a good face, to take care of the kids. Oh, it just worked. The two of them had just beautiful. Worked so well. Great chemistry.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. There's a couple best scenes that just I want to get to the big sequences because every one of those works so well. There's really three of them, but for my money, some of the best moments in this movie are when Jason Clarke and Ryan Gosling are walking. They just gotten hired by NASA. And they've been doing tests for months. They've gotten to know each other. The families have gotten to know each other. And Neil's dealing with all this shit years later after his daughter's death. And Jason Clarke finally has the movie speech about space.
Yes.
To Ryan Gosling. And this is, you hear this in every movie where they just hit the theme, right? You know, this whole thing we're doing, it just, you know, it just gives me faith. Ryan, it just gives me faith. And Ryan Gosling looks at him and he looks around at his surroundings and he goes, I guess Ed's got a new swing set, huh? It's just like Damien Chazelle saying, you are not in that movie.
Right.
You are not in the post Hidden Figures.
No,
you are not
life.
In The Blind Side. You are not in a Spielberg film.
Right.
We're making this as real, grounded in realism as we human as we can. You are not in Dunkirk, where Kenneth Branagh is just going to say home.
And that's some of the home. Irony of this, too, is that how, for how well written and how beautifully looking this movie is, like I said, a lot of it is about what's not said and what you don't see.
You remember Arsenio Hall's show with the whoop
yes.
whoop and fist pump? That's what I wanted to do in that scene. So that was one of them. The other one, Mike, was Claire Foy watches with Neil, and they're both just, they're so repressed, and it's so sad that they're so repressed.
They're watching, so good at playing repressed too, though.
They're it's watching beautiful. The mission before Apollo 11, or I guess Apollo 10.
Wasn't 13.
So they're watching that mission. Basically, they're checking off all the boxes to get Neil to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And they both watch it, and Neil's just sitting there, hand on his chin. He's like, oh, shit, it's dwelling on him. She literally goes out of the room into the bedroom, and she's just like swaying or something. She's just turned her back. Her son walks in to check on the mom. And it's just great. Text versus subtext. And she can't not say it to her son. Your daddy's going to the moon, son. And the son goes, okay,
yeah.
Can I go outside?
Can I go play?
Are you kidding me? And that's just like, wow.
Yeah, the flurry of emotions that shit's going through her head, it's juxtaposed against how it was such a big deal for us. And Claire Foy was the keeper of the kids' emotions the whole time, too. She made sure that things were as normal as they could be for them to grow up. But at the same time, she knew those children were owed explanations.
So the best acted scene of the movie is coming.
Yeah, the big emotional. And that is the most emotion they let out in front of each other.
This is the break into act three, I would say.
So the night before the Apollo 11 takes off, yeah. And Gosling's supposed to be there. He's packing, he's diddling away. And Claire Foy knows he's doing unnecessary things. He's just trying to kill time to get the hell out of the house because it's killing him to be there.
Are you just going to pack your briefcase?
I mean,
she's had it at this point. She's going
She's
fed going
up.
At him because, listen, you know, we have to have a moment here. We have to have a family moment. You could be dead in a day or two.
Right.
At any point.
And she knows, as the keeper of the kids' confidence and emotions, she implores on Neil and tells him, you're going to wake them up. You will tell them that you may not come back.
Here's the crazy thing about that sequence. To me, how I read that sequence was her, in many ways, doing it for him. Like, cause she could have took, she I'm sure she did 100 times. The real woman and the character I would
this
buy.
This is interesting because I saw it differently. But
she would take those kids. She could take those kids aside and give them the emotional rundown on what the chances are or whatever. I think the way she played that and the way she allowed him to do it and the way she, it was like the greatest coaching scene that I've seen.
So you think she was doing it for Gosling's benefit?
I think
for Neil
there's
Armstrong's
part
benefit.
Of it. Well, but there's a part of me that sees her supporting him through that scene as well, because he can't survive repressed up there. He has to do this for the right reasons.
Get it all
and
out.
He has to do this with a clear conscience in a way.
Here's where I would argue with that though. He's still repressed when answer. He's handling the questions from his own children like they're questions from the press. He's giving non-answers.
The parallel.
He's giving
of the press conference.
Yeah.
To the dinner table scene. It's the
so
same,
he's not really letting anything
it's
out.
The same character, but the emotions are there. The moment that it really struck me that it was therapeutic for him or that his emotions are coming through was when the son asked him, will he go be at his swim meet?
Right.
And then
sorry,
you see.
I won't. Yeah, that
he breaks down yes. for a half a second there.
Before composing himself, yeah.
Before composing himself, and he goes, no.
Yeah.
You're
right.
And that's where he's breaking down, and that's where the now, wife see, almost rang the bell at that point. Saved him by the bell at that
but
after
I didn't,
that.
But I didn't think that was for her. I thought she had said, the subtext there was, look, I have done everything for you. I have sacrificed basically a home life, a social life. I have dealt with your pain and your burdens, this unbelievable loss we both suffered. I haven't even approached you about it. I've stuffed all those feelings down. We haven't talked about the loss of our daughter. I've done it for your benefit because I know you're doing important shit out there. I'm not going to be the one to tell these kids, you for all I've sacrificed for you, right, can take it upon yourself to make sure these kids are as normal and well-rounded as possible.
I agree with you. I think both of our interpretations are true. I think it's playing on multiple levels, right, because I think she loves him, and it's very clear. And I think she also loves her children and needs him to prepare the children like only he could. Mm-hmm. Even if he mangles it like he does.
Right.
They need that final sit down with
potential
their father.
Closer,
they need that
closure,
final memory if this is going to happen. And it's a courageous scene. Even if it's imperfect, she knows the family needs that closure. They need it. They can't get by without it. They can't survive the next week without it. And it's just a genius cinematic screenwriting.
Amongst other highlights, not only of the script, but also of Claire Foy, does, when the radio gets turned off, they cut the radio because Neil is spinning out in space and they think that he might not come back. And she has that little CV radio. She's able to hear the communications mm-hmm. between the tower and the spaceship.
Right.
And they cut it off because they don't want anyone on the outside to hear if this goes horribly life-costingly wrong.
She
storms down to NASA and just
turn the radio back on. That's fucking badass.
She's such a boss.
I agree. She demands an answer and then absolutely, because she knows that everything is intertwined with her family and this family of astronauts, and that's what I think that's what the story is about. It's a man at the crossroads between the two. I mean, that's an archetypal story, of course. It's a story
between family and history.
It's a story of Hollywood too. I mean, every Hollywood, most of them have been male-centric films, in our day and age, it's the man, the professional man, the husband and father, and that's been a crossroads for almost every screenplay in the last 50 years. Now, I think this is one of the more fascinating looks at that.
There were some negatives. I appreciated the middle ground, the moderation that Chazelle tried handling the issue with, because he presented both sides. He presented how it was going on, you know, through the Vietnam War, and how young people are dying and the government's putting so much money in the space program. There's the black strife, the black students are making, you know, having a poetry session saying how everything's okay because Whitey's on the moon. We're all out in the streets dying and getting sprayed at and getting killed, but Whitey's on the moon.
Yeah, I think... That was a
I liked that.
Way to handle
it. I did like that, but that was really the only minority we had in this whole movie, wasn't it?
Here's the thing. I believe the sacrifice for this accomplishment was just great on many levels, and it was great for the family, and this is like a C or D plot, but yeah, I mean, you have civil rights just blown up. It's the 60s.
Right.
You have poverty, ridiculous amounts of poverty for large swaths of people in the country and then around the world. And you got billions of dollars being spent on the space program. It was a major criticism, not just inside of the program. Like, is this worth it? That's a question that was just asked within the program. Are we losing too many astronauts? Never mind the money and the big picture thinking, the macro thinking of, is this worth it for our country?
Succeed, yeah.
Like, they showed Kurt Vonnegut's actual interview where he's like, I think we should allocate these funds for roads and schools, right, and or whatever he said.
I'd like if New York City was inhabitable.
Right.
You said put the money towards that. Because again, in the 70s, especially if you know anything about history, the 70s, New York City was just basically slums.
Yeah, just watch the deuce.
I appreciate that it was highlighted, but just speaking from 3,000 feet away, we had this whole history recently of Oscars so white here, and we have a great huge movie that we're huge fans of and we're proponents of, and there's just pretty much nothing but white people everywhere.
I like the fact that they showed the sacrifice of this whole thing, and yes, you're right. I mean, it's a white movie. It was just a white group of astronauts. What are we gonna
do? I know,
and that's just what it was back then, and it wasn't right. And Hidden Figures showed why
exactly
that was the case, and how the contribution from every other race, color, and creed,
which was going to be a point I bring up. I mean, there is a movie that suggests that this was, you know, there were minorities involved all along the way. I just felt they should have been highlighted. It was very obvious to me that this was a white movie, is my point.
It is a white movie. This story is a focused story about this group of white people.
Right.
And that's what it is.
Right.
If you think it's a bad movie because it's not about a larger group of people and a larger cross-section of races, colors, and creeds, then I get it.
Right.
And I can't argue with you there.
Can't knock that argument, yeah.
But right. I don't think that disqualifies it as a movie. It's just a movie about a couple white people.
Right. I would tend to agree. I think that's a fair explanation.
In terms of final final words here, Mike, in terms of the best scenes for me, like other than the family stuff, because there's bangers, there's great scenes that are just the family moments.
Yeah. Those are well-acted scenes. Never mind the scenes with the cinematography. Oh, my God.
But the quote-unquote action sequences, the test in the beginning, like we said, the test in the middle where the mission that goes wrong, the Gemini mission.
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
That was my favorite scene as well.
And how don't we, like you said before, how don't we get thoroughly dizzy? Like, what is the magic?
And the shots, it's such quick editing, quick cuts, and it's shaky cam to quick cuts to we're spinning, and we see the spinning. The noise, the sound editing, too, the sound mixing of how that sound is vroom, 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 every to signify we're spinning, because we can't really see we're spinning otherwise, and just, it was so well done. I don't know how he pulled it off without somebody getting sick.
The fact that we're so well-oriented, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's so clear.
You know what's going on.
You know what's going on, and when it's just a million odometers or whatever gauge is spinning.
Not only in that scene, but there's other scenes where we're in pitch black. Pitch black, no sound, and we have an idea of what's going on. Pitch black, we can only see the whites of Ryan Gosling's eyes.
In terms of a screenwriting pointer, the hero's journey, you have tests for the hero in early act two, and you're supposed to test the hero to the point where he learns something so that at the midpoint, he is using what he's learned and the knowledge and the whatever he accumulated during the test phase. So you got tests into the midpoint. Well, this is the midpoint of the movie, and one of the most obvious tests of that beginning of Act Two.
Actual tests, yeah.
Is that big contraption
yes.
where he's trying not to get sick.
Not to pass out
while he fixes something and stabilizes something. That literally is what he has to do in the Gemini mission, which earns him the Apollo mission
yes.
because of his coolness under fire. And with his partner's life on the line, his partner passes out. And he literally is like, let's go again. Let me ride this mechanical bull again. Let me do it again. And it's amazing that you literally take the test and you pay off that test in the midpoint and in that midpoint sequence. I was surprised that there wasn't more going wrong with the final sequence. And I thought that was very pointed, and there was a good reason for it.
Well, they were running low on fuel before they touched the moon.
So that was the big thing. So that was the big climax of the movie. When he looked at the abort. Or not abort.
Right.
And that countdown.
It's a tough sell because at that point, we know.
He said it before, though. Like, we failed down here, so we don't fail up there.
And we also know the payoff. Like, this guy walks on the moon, so
this is,
I don't know how much more dramatic it could have been made, you know?
Right. So it works for me, and I think to have the most heavy dramatic scene be right before that downward action of everything being successful, and then to have one more uptick. Again, in screenwriting terminology, you're storming the castle, you're getting everything together, and that finale, there's a five-part finale, save the cat, blah, blah, blah. It's all rising action. And that's what it was. This is all rising action again. And then to finally have a final dilemma, even though it's characterized just in visuals, that's great. But the epilogue to this movie and why it's still built is that final scene between husband and wife.
She's still resistant. She's still, I mean, they have, so Neil's in quarantine.
Yep.
They can only see each other. Claire Foy comes in. They can only see each other through a window, basically. And she's still resistant. She doesn't say anything. She's not, like, overly joyed
like,
to see
you
him.
Can, like, what if you would write the dialogue to that scene? I love that it has no dialogue. We don't want dialogue.
It's an interesting question.
If as a screenwriting exercise, what's the subtext through their performances that they're not saying? I mean, and one way I could say, she's like, was this all worth it? Again, the question that we've been asking.
You're killing me, Smalls. Yeah.
You're killing me, Smalls. Was this all worth it? You just put me through the worst hell of my life. I know you've been through the worst hell of your life.
Maybe it's, will you ever really understand my pain? Because he doesn't really... He's very obsessed with the work.
I think it's crazy because they're both looking at one another like they don't understand. They know they can't understand what the other one has been through.
Right, right.
They know how much they loved each other. And then what do they choose at the end of it all? They still love each other.
Yeah, of course.
They put their hands on the glass. Together. You know, he kisses the glass. And that's just... That makes... It just works so well.
No.
And it's so poignant. And I loved it.
What a great movie. I said to you, this is my point too, of I don't feel like there was a wasted scene in this movie. There's so much more we didn't talk about how Jason Clarke's character ends up dying during a test mission as well. He's dealing with death throughout. Neil's there to represent the NASA program at the White House, and he has to be called back because of that drama that unfolds, and he's got to cope with himself there as well. There's so much in this movie that I can't believe was packed into not only 2 hours and 20 minutes, but that didn't feel like 2 hours and 20 minutes on top of it.
Yeah.
We'll get into final grades here. I'm usually lower than you. I think I might be higher. I don't know, but where you said you were struggling to grade it. Where'd you end up?
I'm at an A-93 at this moment.
Oh, wow. All right. That's
I have it as an A.
I'm oscillating between 92 and 93 myself.
I was right there, 92, 93.
So, yeah.
And I
A minus A territory. I think I've only given out four A's since we've reviewed stuff here.
But so this is a movie going experience I'm going to remember for a long time.
This one was special. This is something special. This is right now for me the best picture leader.
I would agree with you.
It's going to be tough to beat for me. We'll see how it all plays out, and we'll see if this gains momentum. Hopefully it does. Guys, get out there and see this movie. Make sure you're in the right headspace, first of all. But this is definitely a movie that warrants your attention, especially if you're an Oscars fan or an award season fan, for a couple reasons. Not only the picture, but the screenplay, the cinematography. My God, the score, the acting performances, the directing, everything. You could not ask for more. I said to you walking out, this felt like one of the most complete movies since maybe Shawshank or something like that. I just was that engrossed.
And the IMAX experience was awesome.
No, totally, totally worth it. I apologize to Matt Neglia for my... I hope they stick around, yes.
If you saw it on a regular screen and then want to see it on an IMAX, it's worth it to go see it again on an IMAX.
Without question. We want to know your thoughts for sure. We want to know what you thought of this or any of the recent Oscar Sprint profiles, not to mention any of the Halloween movies as we lead up. That will be our movie event next week, next Thursday night, Friday morning early. We'll be getting out that review to you as well. But that one probably not going to be an Oscar contender, much like this one in last week's The Star is Born arc.
It's a contender for our top 10s on the year, though,
yes,
I would say.
Certainly.
I mean, I think we love this franchise. You going in, and me, I've grown to love it. Even the bad watches are pretty fun.
And we have some bad watches on deck, too. You'll be hearing in the next couple of days. We're going to release another Saturday episode.
I don't know what to think of this next watch. Halloween 6, man, I don't even get what
I
watch.
Well, technically, the next one's going to be 4 and 5. That'll be released tomorrow. So we already recorded it. But yes, I can't wait to get to Halloween 6. We have a couple more after that. We're going to do more Oscar stuff next week as well, leading up to the Halloween review. And then maybe finally we can step back and take a breath.
And I think, you know, again, for this quote-unquote Oscar sprint, because we finally got a year under our belt, we've been doing this year round, we've been covering it as it goes, we're going to revisit these films. I've been thinking about how we're going to do that, but we're going to revisit these films both in a non-spoiler and spoiler way, I think. And I think that's going to be fun, and I think that's going to be us telling you where we land at the end of the day after all our rewatches, because this is this is just stage one.
Yeah, but on first blush, I don't think we can get better than what we did
blown
tonight.
Away after a first view.
So yeah, guys, reach out to us. Reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us, especially something as good as First Man. You can reach out to us at Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com, MikeMikeAndOscar.com on Reddit over there. We are everywhere from TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, etc., anywhere. If you listen to podcasts regularly somewhere and we are not in that database, let us know. We will put ourselves there. Mike, on one of the more epic Oscar sprint profiles we've done, what are your final words of wisdom here?
That Damien Chazelle. That's all I'll say.
He's decent.
That Damien Chazelle. I mean, 3 for 3. Whiplash, a movie. La La Land, to me, was an A-minus movie, but still very, 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 very good. And this movie might be an A-minus. This kid's first three movies.
And it's an interesting point, too, because they're so pretty diverse. La La Land, not at all like this one. Not at all like...
The guy made 3 for 3 Oscar movies.
He's special. Something definitely very, very special.
Oh, my God.
Good words of wisdom to end on. We will see you guys tomorrow. We got a Halloween episode. It's another special Saturday episode, and we'll see you next week as well.
See ya.